And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, Biden did go to Poland and the Ukraine, did not go to Ohio. Do you think he was right to do what he, that kind of trip?
Yeah, I think it was right. This was an in-your-face to Vladimir Putin. First of all, we have to understand that foreign policy is a passion of Joe Biden's. He was on the Foreign Affairs Committee. I've heard him speak on that a number of times. He was actually in 2008 when he was running for president against Hillary and Obama. He came to our office, and the one thing he spoke about was foreign policy. It's amazing how much he cares about that. And we saw what he did in terms of putting NATO back together again after Trump weakened it and attacked it. That also was a shot at Vladimir Putin. And I think it's also a signal to China about Taiwan that the United States is prepared to do what's necessary to back Taiwan. Don't forget, we didn't have a real treaty with Ukraine, but we do have one with Taiwan. So this is...
We don't have a treaty with Taiwan. We have a unilateral declaration.
Declaration, okay. You know, he's been doing things, reasserting in the Pacific. He had that agreement that he undercut France with the submarines, with England and Australia. Japan is boosting its defenses. The Philippines has asked us to come back. If you remember, they kind of threw us out a number of years ago. And these are all signs, you know, regarding China. Now, China, of course, Xi and Putin have gotten together, but it's unclear exactly how much aid China is going to give Russia. Maybe they are going to supply ammunition and suicide drones is something that I heard about. But from what I'm seeing, that the Chinese are really opportunistic. They realize that Russia's the weak sister here. For years, the Soviet Union was the stronger of the two. And they can buy gas and whatever, you know, what they need. Probably they can force Putin to sell it for cheaper. And then they recoup their money by selling him what he needs. So they're just extending their dominion in that regard. Now, they won't say it all, you know, formally, but I think that's what's happening there. Biden, you know, again, he got good publicity. He captured the attention of the media. You know, they've been talking about him being decrepit and old. He got on a plane at 4:30 in the morning, flew I don't know how many hours. There was a stop because it wasn't Air Force One. Got to Poland, secretly got on a 10-hour train ride, and seemed pretty fresh the next day, walking with Zelensky, even during an air raid drill. As someone said, Putin did him a favor by causing the sirens to go. So he was displaying the power of the presidency, and of course he made more commitments. Although in a subsequent interview with ABC, he said they're not going to get the planes yet at this point. So I think that was a good move. Now, the Republicans are trying to counter that by saying, well, he should have gone to Ohio instead of to Ukraine. Of course, the crisis in Ukraine is far greater than the crisis in Ohio, but of course Ohio, you know, are Americans, not Ukrainians. And I don't know whether this was something that slipped through the cracks in the change of the chiefs of staff. They could have handled it somewhat better. I mean, Buttigieg didn't go either. Now, on the other hand, the other agencies were there from day one. The NTSB, the EPA, all these others. Buttigieg, who's been under attack, and of course they're attacking him because he's gay, and he did say he should have gone sooner, but he got attacked for not sending the NTSB, and he tweeted out, that's not part of of the Transportation Department, that's an independent agency. So we have that dynamic, and of course Trump then, sensing something, a vacuum, went there. Like I told a friend of mine, he went there really to publicize his water. You know, he came there and said, here's my Trump water. But he did make an important statement. And this is a key thing that the Democrats keep forgetting. The one thing I think Trump did the best was when he said, you are not forgotten. And that's been a theme of the growth of the popularity of the right wing among that segment of Americans, that they feel that they've been forgotten, that the world has passed them by, and that the elites on the coast don't care about them. So that was a messaging coup for Trump in that regard. And Biden could have gone before he went to Ukraine. I have a feeling that one of the reasons he didn't go is, one, he didn't want to get in the way of things, but number two, he was probably preparing for the secret trip. There was a lot of things that had to be done before he went, but still, they're Americans and they're hurting. And the fact
I don't understand why Buttigieg didn't go. He didn't have to go to the Ukraine.
Yeah, he's usually much more politically astute than that. He should have been there. He did issue a statement. Now, don't forget, though, the governor of Ohio waited 2 weeks to declare emergency. But he's not taking the flak. Buttigieg did say that he's going to make these folks pay and what have you. The railroad, Norfolk Southern, their CEO, went on a town hall on, I think it's CNN, and took a lot of flack for what they did. You know, this is what's been happening. They've been cutting back on safety, and they've been paying all their money to the stockholders. That's the philosophy, that their highest and only obligation is to the stockholders. They've paid billions to that, and they have not installed the best safety features on the trains.
What's shocking to me is that I heard the National Safety Board said they don't set the standards for safety on the railroads. Each railroad does it itself.
Yeah.
And there's no supervision. They can decide whatever they want to decide. This is a safe way to operate the railroad. And different railroads have different standards. And that's it. Well, what kind of safety standards is that?
Well, there were some requirements that Obama put in that Trump took off, in terms of Obama wanted these braking systems to go in.
But it wasn't the braking system that changed that caused this particular accident.
Yeah, it was a bearing.
It was a bearing, and it was the sensors along the road how far apart they were placed to pick up the condition of the bearings.
And there was also the other thing about the amount of heat that it was generated.
Right.
As some of the railroads have a lesser standard than others.
Right.
But let's face it. The Democrats, you know, can regain the high ground here by talking about why you need the administrative state.
That's right.
There are all these. It's not just the prevention, but when the pollution occurs, you've got the EPA's got to oversee what they're going to do. Now, I don't know where this company is going to dump the ground, the contaminated earth that they've dug up. They haven't moved it yet.
They can put it where they put the fracking fluid down some mine shaft and cause earthquakes.
Well, we don't know, but that's something that's going to have to be overseen as well.
That's right.
On the other hand, first of all, nobody died there. Nobody was injured. But this is going to be another one of those, and it's a long-term thing with regard to health there. But it's a recurring thing because the railroads, this isn't the only railroad that takes hazardous materials through towns and cities. They basically all do. Now, Josh Shapiro was quick to, even though this happened in Ohio, there was a spillover into Pennsylvania with the air and whatever. And he's quick to say that they're going to sue the railroad for whatever they can in order to protect the cost. I guess there were some of the Pennsylvania fire departments or EMS people had to go in there. It was that close to the border.
Well, you know, this train had was about just about 2 miles long. It had exactly two workers running the train. That strikes me as very dangerous. I can't see how two people can possibly control a 2 mile long loaded train.
So yeah, I don't know enough about it, but I get the impression that the trains nowadays are pretty sophisticated with computers and monitors and things like that. The old days they used to require them to have a caboose and to have somebody riding in the caboose. And the trains heavily lobbied to get rid of that. And of course, I don't even know if these folks are in a union, these train people at this point.
No, these guys were in a union. They are. But it doesn't matter. The union doesn't set the safety standards, and the union had nothing to do with the staffing of the train.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that they could bargain for, is staff.
They could. They could,
yeah.
But who knows what the condition of the union is? I don't.
Yeah.
But I want to get back to Biden. So you think Biden acquitted himself well, poked his finger in Putin's eye, and that was a good thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm wondering, what's the long term outlook? What's Biden's idea? What's his strategy? How does this war end? It strikes me that what Biden is saying is we're not going to negotiate. We're not going to let the Ukrainians negotiate. We're going to beat the Russians. That's the only acceptable solution.
Well, this thing is, if you listen to the people who study authoritarians and fascists and whatever, this is only going to end when Putin decides it's going to end, or Putin is going to end. In essence, that's basically what's going to happen. There's things that just aren't controllable, and when you've got somebody like Putin who's made a huge blunder and has no checks and balances on his thing, he's going to continue to fight to the last man unless somebody steps in and stops it.
Well, the Chinese did publish 2 days ago a proposal for negotiations that for a ceasefire, ending of hostilities. They've got an 11-point plan. You read it over, you say to yourself, well, this is basically how wars that aren't won by either side, this is how they get settled. Biden didn't comment on the plan. He commented on the Chinese. He said they didn't have the right to propose a plan. It was illogical that they should propose a plan. Zelensky said he was prepared to talk about the plan. So I don't quite understand Biden's strategy.
Well, Biden has always said it's up to the Ukrainians to decide what they want to do on this thing.
But the British report that every time the Ukrainians said they wanted to talk to the Russians, the American State Department said don't do it.
Well, I mean, I've gotten the impression that the Ukrainians don't trust the Russians.
I'm sure they don't.
I mean, let's face it. when the Soviet Union broke up, Ukraine had the third largest cache of nuclear weapons. And there was an agreement among Russia, the United States, and Ukraine that the Ukrainians would turn their nuclear weapons over to Russia with guarantees of their sovereignty, their territorial sovereignty. So, I mean, from the Ukrainian standpoint, is how are we going to enforce anything that Putin agrees to?
Well, that's part of the negotiation, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what choice have you got? Either the Ukrainians win or the Russians win, or you stop it and nobody wins and everybody's unhappy, right?
Yeah. And those things don't, those circumstances don't usually last very long.
Korea has lasted a long time, 70 years. There's a ceasefire. There's not even a peace treaty. There's just a ceasefire. But there's no war. There's no killing. You know, let's not forget, we're talking here about nuclear weapons. Yeah. I hate to be the guy that's making the argument that says we can trust Putin not to use the nuclear weapons. If you don't trust him for anything, why do you trust that he won't use the nuclear weapons? I don't believe that he can be trusted. Therefore, I want the war to stop. The Ukrainians will lose some territory? They will. No question about it. The Russians will not get what they want? That's true. They won't get what they want. The situation ought not to have occurred, but it did occur. But we can't let it get worse. It seems to me the whole world has a stake in that.
Well, the whole world has a stake, certainly, and that's one of the things.
Yeah.
If the Russians get to keep territory, it is in some ways a victory for them.
That's true. Every compromise is in some way a victory for each side, and in some ways a defeat for each side. That's what a compromise is.
Yeah. Well, we're just going to have to see how it plays out.
The problem is that if this keeps up with the Russians and it keeps up with the Chinese, and now Biden has sent 300 trainers to Taiwan. I recall that's how we got started with Indochina. We sent a couple of hundred trainers to Indochina. All of a sudden, it's just happened. It mushroomed. I don't quite get it. Why do you want to fight about Taiwan?
You know, it's not Taiwan in particular. It's stopping the authoritarianism.
You're not. How? How are you stopping the authoritarianism?
The Chinese. You know, it's the Chinese going after Taiwan.
The Chinese aren't going after Taiwan. The Chinese have claimed Taiwan from the get-go.
Yeah. Well, if you let that happen to Taiwan, what happens with Japan? What happened?
Nobody's claiming Japan. Taiwan has a unique situation historically. The dynasty claimed it. The Sun Yat-sen Republic claimed it. Chiang Kai-shek's Republic claimed it. And the People's Republic claimed it. Nobody has ever said, and when Chiang Kai-shek evacuated to Taiwan, he said, this is China. He called it the Republic of China.
I understand that, but the Taiwanese have always been separate.
Only some Taiwanese, only some.
Well, yeah.
Well, there you go. Now, you got people in Idaho that want to annex Oregon.
He had just lost China. You know, his incompetence and his corruption, he lost China, so he was trying to say, I'm still the ruler of China. But
the point is, everybody, every Chinese government, has said Taiwan is part of China. Now, and when Nixon made a deal with Mao, the deal was, I'm not going to argue about Taiwan. You know, I know, everybody knows that the Trump policy, which the Biden administration has taken up and developed, is a repudiation of that. It's just that simple. You can talk till you're blue in the face, but it's a repudiation of that. What's the benefit to the world? What's the benefit to the United States? You've picked on the one thing, probably, that Xi Jinping cannot compromise on, because that's the heart of his nationalist appeal. Don't forget, he's no socialist. He's no communist. He's not fighting for an egalitarian world. He's fighting for a unified China. That's Formosa. That's Taiwan. And he can't possibly give in on that. To say we're going to liberate Taiwan, we're going to help them be independent, is to say I'm going to overthrow the People's Republic. That's a big war.
Well, but yeah, the question is, does he really want to move on that?
Who, Biden or she?
There's a lot of, you know, he's got a lot at stake.
Who? Which one? Who are we talking about?
All the Western investment. We've seen what his assurances were in Hong Kong, right? Going to keep them independent or keep autonomous, so to speak. That didn't work very long. Tibet, we know what's happened there. He doesn't want North Korea. I mean, they're a pain, but he has some control over that. If the stakes are high enough, for now, right now, he's distracted with Russia. He's going to have to see how that plays out. That's what, if Russia fails to achieve their end, I think that he's got some issues in convincing his folks that they should be going. And it's as we learned in World War II, it's one thing if you're in a contiguous landmass. It's another thing when you've got to, move an army across a body of water.
That's true, but the Americans have a lot more water to cross. He's only got a few miles.
Yeah, but the Americans aren't going to put troops there.
Of course, they're starting
to
put.
All they have to do is stop.
David, they've already started putting troops there. They've put troops there.
Yeah,
we've just sent 300 troops.
Yeah, I hear that, but they don't have it like we have it in Japan. They don't have it like we have it in Korea, or people in Australia. All they have to do is stop an invasion force from crossing the water. China has. They have no. They can't tunnel their way there, and they don't have enough arm. I don't think they can airdrop it. They're building their navy up, but that's what it's going to be. It's going to be who stops whom with the naval stuff.
But that's not my question. My question is why is the United States, why is the Biden administration doing it? What's the benefit? How does it help? Who does it help?
It's a benefit saying the world that we're going to stop this type of authoritarian conquest.
Nonsense. Well, I don't believe it for a minute. You're telling me that the Americans are against authoritarianism? What about what about all the fascist regimes we support, some of whom we've put in power?
Yeah, most of which we put in power in order to fight communism.
But we put them in power, right?
We put them in power.
And there's no communism right now, and they're still in power.
They're still.
Well, I can't see that the American government, the American administration, any of them, have any moral authority to say we are the defenders of democracy. I don't see it.
Well, I think particularly when it comes to Europe, that's not true. But, even in the Western Hemisphere, things have pretty much changed.
Well, they pretty much changed. But meanwhile, you have a 100-year history, more than a 100-year history, if you can look at the Western Hemisphere, that you can hardly be proud about if you are talking about the defense of sovereignty and democracy, right?
Yeah, I mean, Argentina, Chile.
You go up the continent. There's 21 countries. You can name them all. All of them, right?
By the way, did you see what happened with Mexico this week?
The Mexicans changed their supervision over their elections, right?
Yeah. The reformer has decided that the reform that helped him come to power now is no good.
Right. Exactly. Well,
and this is the thing about power corrupting. In Hungary, Orban wasn't always an authoritarian. He was his first go around was he was considered more of the liberal side.
Right.
You see it in Israel now as well.
Right.
You see all these things. It's just power for the sake of power whenever they can do it. And that's what we're fighting here in the United States. I mean, we're seeing We're seeing that. We're seeing it state by state.
So what do you say about divorce?
It worked so well the first time. You're talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Absolutely. The actual, the real leader of the House Republicans, right?
Yeah, yeah. Wants to separate the red and the blue states. And, you know, and mandate, of course, that school prayer be said and that the Pledge of Allegiance be said, which, of course, states that we're one nation indivisible, mm-hmm. as she divides it. Mm-hmm. But irony is not her strong suit.
No.
It's performance art, but it's been elevated because the Republican Party or the Republicans in Congress, Kevin McCarthy, have no backbone.
But polls indicate that a majority of the rank and file Republican voters don't disagree with her. They support it.
Yeah.
Whatever nonsense it is, they support it.
Yeah, well, they support it because essentially they don't see the full ramifications of it. And by the way, there are some liberals that support it. There was a book written several years ago about the Big Sort, and it continues. People living in blue, living in blue states don't want to live among, or neighbors don't want to live among others, and vice versa. We've seen it. We see it now playing out in Idaho, where they want to have basically a hyper-libertarian form of government. They want to annex part of Oregon and essentially make it an anti-liberal state. We're seeing Florida. People are actually being attracted to Florida. I was reading something about police officers moving to Florida. People who don't want to be vaccinated moving to Florida. People who have the similar beliefs as Ron DeSantis are actually moving to Florida. They want to live in a state like that. I guess, you know, I'm just waiting for Florida to, to ban M&Ms entirely. We'll see. We'll see about that. But, you know, this is what's been happening. It's serious business. It's serious business.
Well, the call for separation, the call for secession, that was pretty standard in the 19th century. Not only the slave owners called for secession, and many abolitionists called for secession.
Yeah.
But the Civil War ended that discussion.
Yeah. I think they think they can win it again, of course. Most of those states that want to are thinking of seceding are the taker states. They're the ones that pay less into the government than they get out of it, and the wealthier states are the blue states. Now the states that I think have the more of the gun culture are the ones that are thinking of seceding.
But they're not thinking of seceding. Nobody's really thinking of seceding.
Well, they call it, it's a. They want the benefits, but none of the responsibilities.
That's fair. That's fair. That's good. Every child wants that. That's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, listen, the benefit here is that we've come to an end.
Yeah.
We've come to an end. We got, what's coming up next week? Anything that you know about?
We don't know. You never know what's going to come up. You know, this week was supposed to be a National Day of Hate. It seemed to have fizzled out.
Who are we supposed to hate?
The usual suspects.
Oh, good. Fantastic.
Yeah, you and me.
I thought maybe I was hating the wrong things.
Yeah, you and me.
You and me, and, right.
We'll just see what happens. We'll just have to see what happens. March starts this week. So technically the three winter months are over. And we'll see if it comes in like a lion or comes in like a lamb.
All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk.
longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.